Well, you don't have to have been following the Sydney underworld to know the name Roger Rogerson. He has been very well publicised over the years. Miniseries on television stations, free-to-air television stations, have made him even more famous. And even people not living in Sydney will have heard of the name Roger Rogerson. Well, according to Duncan McNabb, who was a former police officer, now a crime writer, killer cop Roger Rogerson is soon going to have to continue to protest his innocence, but in hell. Duncan McNabb writes, about 11:30 a.m. on Friday, the disgraced 83-year-old, his life support was switched off. The once celebrated detective, who became known as Roger the Dodger, had been rushed to Prince of Wales Hospital after suffering a brain aneurysm inside his prison cell last Thursday. Sources said he has hours or maybe days before the 83-year-old is officially declared dead. It's understood Roger's son, or his family, have been told that he could live as long as a week. Duncan McNabb, who worked with Rogerson before charting his exploits in a series of books, said the former detective's demise is of no great loss. So just who was Roger Rogerson? I shouldn't say that, because it's who he is, Roger Rogerson. As far as Thomas and I can find out, he's still drawing breath in hospital. But it could be today, it could be hours, it could be a week until he draws his last breath. Someone who knew him very, very well and had written about him and done television specials on him is Adam Shand, who was a crime investigative reporter. He's filled in for me on this program on a number of occasions, and we've spoken to him about different colourful criminals over the last few years. Adam has met Roger Rogerson and had numerous conversations with him and got to know him pretty well. And I spoke to Adam late last night about his thoughts on Roger the Dodger Rogerson. Adam Shan, good morning to you.
Hey, Luke. How you going, mate?
I'm very, very well. Really appreciate your time. Adam, you've been an investigative crime journalist for many, many, many years now, and you've uncovered and you've looked into and investigated all sorts of stories. But in all your years of doing this, have you come across anyone quite as colourful and as deadly as former detective Roger Rogerson?
Well, that's a good question. I think certainly wearing a badge. I think there was no one who's ever been in any police force in Australia that was quite as deadly and cunning and manipulative as Roger Caleb Rogerson, an amazing character.
Tell us about him. He was born in 1941, but he first came to my attention, because I'm not a crook. I mean, the criminal element around Sydney and King's Cross, everyone knew everybody, and back in the 70s, you know, there was a code of its own, wasn't it? You basically could do what you wanted. But he first came to my attention when he shot dead that drug dealer, Warren Lamfranchi. Take us through
it. Well, that was back in 81, in June 81, and he met him in Dangar Place, Chippendale, supposedly because Warren was concerned that Roger was going to shoot him, and he was Nettie Smith, apparently, I think, brought him down there for the meeting and convinced Lamfranchi that he was going to be safe, but he wasn't. And the story is that Rogerson shot him in cold blood. There was no gun there. They fit him up, and the other officers there may have helped Roger tell the story, because the living man tells the story. And Lanfranchi's girlfriend, Sally Ann Huckstep, continued to say that Roger had killed Warren in cold blood, and she ended up, unfortunately, dead in a shallow pond in Centennial Park at the hands of Nettie Smith, who was, of course, Roger Rogerson's criminal associate and to whom he gave a green light.
And then there was the shooting of former policeman Mick Drury. Chatswood is where he lived, in Sydney's North Shore, shot through his kitchen window.
Amazing, that one.
Take us through that.
I actually went back to that scene recently and had a look at that. And it's about 2 metres, just over the fence, looking into the kitchen window. And he was shot with a .45 Magnum. And it's amazing that he wasn't killed. And the story was that Rogerson was on the scene with Christopher Dale Flannery because Mick Drury had busted Alan Williams, who was a drug dealer in Melbourne, and he'd put a contract out on Mick Drury so he could not testify against Williams. And it all went terribly pear-shaped. So he was left very, very badly wounded, but survived.
Flannery, was he Rent-A-Kill?
He was, Mr. Rent-A-Kill.
Mr. Rent-A-Kill, yeah.
Who disappeared himself about a year later. And that was the end of it, really, for Flannery. But also Rogerson, because by 86 he was out of the force. He managed to get through the raindrops, stepped through the raindrops on the Drury matter, and also Lanfranchi. But he was eventually charged with some smaller matters, perverting the course of justice in 1990, and then lying under oath to the Police Integrity Commission. So that was his sort of falling from grace. He was one time a very, very successful policeman, and a lot of people respected him. Even today, you'll find officers who work with him, who even some crooks. I was speaking to a crook today who said, you know what, his word was worth something in that world.
Wow. It was... And I don't know to what extent it still is today. I have no idea. You would know better than anyone. But back in those days, the police and the crooks had an understanding. And I guess in order to understand what the crooks were up to, you had to almost be one yourself, didn't you? You had to disappear into that world.
Well, there's a couple of degrees of this. And, you know, Sydney at that time was, you know, run by George Freeman. And a few others, people like Anderson, Paddles Anderson, Lenny McPherson, and those sort of people. And they had deep connections in the New South Wales Police and even into the judiciary, as we've known. So the Emerald City, Sydney, was a very corrupt place back then, and the crooks did very well with these various corrupt police. And we know that Roger aligned himself with George Freeman and a few others and was prepared to do their bidding. And so he was respected. And so, yeah, so he would use it. He would use it to get closer to crooks, to find information and occasionally make some arrests. But there was a larger play going on. Roger was very greedy, I think, at the end of the day. He liked money.
And he got very careless at the end, didn't he?
Well, he did. It was bad luck that he was caught for the murder of Jamie Gow.
Take us through that.
Yeah, that's back in 2011, maybe. It's going back a while now. And Jamie Gow was a 20-year-old drug dealer who'd arranged to sell some drugs to Rogerson and another officer, former officer Glenn McNamara. And they met him at a storage unit. And Rogerson walked in and apparently just shot him and stole the drugs. And it's always been interesting because people say, well, why did they do it there? He must have been stupid and so on and so forth. But I went to the storage unit and I found out that
to the storage unit?
Yeah, and spoke to the manager and found out, well, was he really stupid or was this just really bad? Like, two things happened. First, the video on the cameras cycled every week, so unless you were caught in that week, it would be erased. But also, prior to that, the police were doing an operation at a nearby McDonald's and they were looking at all the cars in the area. It was about drugs. All the cars in the area. And who should they see in there? Roger Rogerson. So they started to follow the cameras. Where was Roger going? And he led them to the storage unit, which then led them to recover the footage in time.
Wow.
In order to see Jamie Gow's body being taken out in a surfboard bag and dropped out at sea. Well, we didn't see that part, but it's a fascinating story, and that heist was... You know, you see Roger's real cunning nature and manipulative means in that job, because what was going to happen, they murder Jamie Gow, they take the drugs. The drugs were put inside McNamara's car. The car was taken to the unit where McNamara was living in the car park, and then a tow truck driver was supposed to come and take the car to another location, and a third party was supposed to take the drugs out to make sure it was all remote from McNamara and Rogerson. Of course, the police already knew what was going on. They came and took the drugs out. They actually took the car. And McNamara came out into the car park of his unit and saw his car gone and lost his rag, as you can imagine. And you could see into the labyrinthine planning of Roger, but also the cold-bloodedness of him. The thing about Jamie Gow, though, Luke, was that I was talking to Roger Rogers about a fortnight before he killed Jamie Gow.
You were talking to Roger?
I was. I talked to Roger continually over the years. He was a very good source for many journalists, and he was always willing to talk. He was always happy to put doubt on stories and add a bit of mystery and possibly a little bit of rubbish into stories to manipulate them on behalf of himself or other people. Anyway, he was talking about how Christopher Dale Flannery, Mr. Rentokil, was a burier of bodies. And that was a terrible thing. You had to take the body out to sea, and you could disembowel it, and then it would never come back. You could drop it into the ocean, that would be it. But of course, Jamie Gow was just wrapped in a blue tarpaulin and tied to an anchor chain and dropped into the ocean. Of course, the body's there floating on the end of the anchor chain, and eventually it breaks, and Jamie Gow's body comes to the surface, and he was found. So I was amazed that it led me to think that Rogerson had not been involved in the disposal phase. Mm. Of the killing, but only the killing itself. So I don't think he would have done that because he knew how to get rid of bodies, that's for sure.
The people you know, the people you've met, does anything surprise you anymore?
No, it doesn't. I mean, that shocked me, that Roger's greed was so naked and so open, yeah. You know, that he would just shoot this drug dealer who was, in fact, also a police informer. He always gets more and more complex, Luke, when you look at these things, but he was a police informer, and there's, you know, all kinds of interesting stories there. But Roger was always in on the action. I saw him down in Melbourne during the Gangland War, and the story that I heard was that he was coming down there because he was going to offer himself to shoot Carl Williams. That's one story that I heard.
Really?
From the Melbourne crooks, yeah. Because Carl was a massive fan. He'd seen Blue Murder. Can you imagine? He'd seen Blue
Wow.
Murder. And I know Carl wanted to meet Chopper Reed. He didn't in the end, but he wanted to. So I think Roger could have got close to him. I think that was the plan. I mean, some of these plans are ridiculous.
Roger was going to shoot him.
It didn't happen. It didn't happen, of course, but I think, you know, Roger loved a dollar. You know, he loved a dollar. So he was unfortunately pressed into these things. I saw him give a few shows, actually, with Mark Jacko Jackson and Chopper.
And Chopper,
and he'd start the thing by saying, you know, I was in the police force for X number of years, the best that money could buy. You know, was his opening line to his show. But he was a very charismatic individual, and he played the piano, and he sung. He was always the life of the party, and he had a lot of... It took a long time for people in the New South Wales Police Force to actually accept that he was what his critics said he was.
I was always amazed that... Mark Chopper Reed and Rogerson were able to do those speaking tours because weren't they gaining proceeds from crime? I mean, talking about their crimes. I'm surprised they were allowed to do it. Anyway.
Well, that's true. That's a big thing, but it's very hard to prove it too because, you know, that could just be lying, couldn't
they? They could just be lying, of course.
They could be lying. So that law is a little weak in execution, we've seen over the years.
Yeah.
Yes.
Roger Rogerson, hey? Mr. Teflon, a crook, but they say a very charismatic crook.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think he was—he really went to the dark side. He was, as I say, a very celebrated policeman, very good policeman, and he had a lot of respect in the underworld. That's really important in the years that he was policing. But I think he also just got a taste for the money, and that's what undoes them really when they see the crooks that they've been locking up and so forth, and living the life. And they go back to a small house in the suburbs. Well, the temptation becomes intolerable, and it works its way in different ways on individuals. And Roger was, I think, he had a lot of dash, and I think he saw himself as able to do what they did, and tried his best. In fact, even when he was in Long Bay, they put him in the unit where, this is before he was sick, that those who were infirm or elderly. And it was decided he wasn't because he was so infirm then; it was because he was likely to influence other prisoners to do things for him. So he was always charismatic to the end.
An amazing character, Roger Rogerson. According to former police officer and now author Duncan McNabb, his death won't be of any great loss.
No, I think time's moved on. You know, you look at that era. It's watch Blue Murder again. It's actually a great show.
I will. I'm going to.
You can see a whole different era. Life has moved on so much. And Roger simply couldn't exist in a world like we have today. And it was a particular era. It's past. The work between the crooks and the police in New South Wales was profound and deep. And it affected things for many, many years to the judiciary. And Roger was a part of that. You can see him as part of the history of the corrupt New South Wales. And hopefully we've learned a lot from that era. And we just don't see it. And New South Wales Police is much more rigorous. And Roger Rogerson was a milestone for them. And the cultural change was remarkable after the Royal Commission, as we saw. So, yeah, he's certainly in the past now.
Shandy, always great to catch up. Thank you so much.
Good on you, Luke. Thanks, mate.
You and I will talk again soon, I hope.
Indeed, look forward to that.
Take care, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
Really appreciate your time. How good is he? Adam Shand. And the life of what some people say was a lovable rogue. He was lovable if he didn't shoot you or didn't cause you grief. But there it is, Roger Rogerson.